चक्षुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. Verses 38 to 43. So we just heard Kunti giving many reasons why Krishna comes here. Who can give me one reason from the last verses that we heard in the last class? Why is, yeah?
Prayers of
Vasudeva Devaki. Yes, prayers of Vasudeva Devaki. That's one reason. They prayed and he came. Any other reason why? Why did Krishna come, according to Kunti? Yes, glorify and protect pious kings, glorify them, especially King Yadu. Please, King Yadu. Any other reasons why did Krishna come here?
Protect the devotees.
Protect the devotees, yes.
Annihilate the demons.
Yes. In the same verses, Vasudeva and Devaki. Other reasons?
Glorify
his devotees. Other reasons? To teach devotional service. Yes, to relieve the burden of the earth. The burden of the earth. And not only the burden of the earth, everyone's self-created burdens that they're carrying through their life. Of avidya kama, karma vi. Very hard work. So then she also tells why Krishna should not leave. Their demons, not demons, their enemies are still there, still alive, and ready to attack, so how can Krishna leave? And now Kunti tells, what will happen if you leave us? Everything will be useless. So verse 38, Givayam namarupabhyam yadubi sahapandava bhavato darshanam yari virishikanam iveshitu. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit. Similarly, if you do not look upon us, all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and Yadus, will end at once. So the body may be famous. You may have a name, and you might think you're wonderful, but actually, eventually, you're going to end up as a name in a long list of names. Just think, 200 years from now, who will remember you? Well, you have great-grandchildren who will say, oh yeah, who is that? I don't know that person. Not great, great-great-great-grandchildren, maybe after 200 years. Your children remember, your grandchildren maybe, but then after that, who's going to remember you? You'll be a name in a long list. I think in my family, I may not be in that list anymore, but I may be in the list of devotees, that would be nice. That, oh yes, this one was a devotee of Krishna, and she did some service. But actually, who will be able to actually associate with us? Who will think about us even after we leave our body? So Kunti is saying, if you leave us, it's the same as our leaving our body, because you are the life. You are our life. So if our life leaves the body, then what's left? Name. What's the use of If you leave your body, what's the use of your name and your fame? It has no use. So she's equating life with Krishna. If you leave us, then it's just like we're leaving our bodies. Everything has no use to us. People say, oh, we're such great heroes, we're emperor of the world, but what is the value of everything if you're not here without you? So we know what happens to the body at the end of life. We've got three choices for the body. What's one choice? Ashes. It becomes ashes, yes. You burn the body, it becomes ashes. What's another choice?
Burying.
So then it becomes dust. Back to dust. So dust or ashes or?
Throwing the river.
Yeah, stool. The animals eat and they pass stool and that's your body. That's what's become of your body. So three choices of death. So we have to think how to use it properly. And if we don't engage our body in Krishna's service, then it is like decoration of a dead body. And everybody is just trying to decorate a dead body, actually, if you think about it, in this life. They don't understand the life in the body. They don't feed the life in the body. So Kunti is saying, without you, then our bodies are just like dead bodies. And this name and this fame and power, that is decoration of our dead bodies. It'll be like a decoration, because we will feel like dead bodies without you. Now, Prabhupada explains the word consciousness. The word consciousness has no meaning unless you put Krishna in front of it. Krishna consciousness. Consciousness means Krishna consciousness. Just like sunshine. Sunshine, shine has no meaning without the sun. So the sunshine, that's because the sun is there, then the sunshine has meaning. So because Krishna is there, therefore we have consciousness. Without Krishna, we can't even have consciousness. He has to be there to give us consciousness. So therefore, real consciousness means Krishna consciousness. So Krishna is leaving and Kunti's lamenting. We won't be able to see you. What will be the value of our name and fame? And what is the value of our eyes without you? Just like Radharani, she was born blind at the time of her birth. Why is that? Because she didn't want to see anybody first except Krishna. So when finally Krishna came to visit their house, and he crawled up to her little crib and he looked over the side, and Radharani opened her eyes. And she saw Krishna first thing. That's all she wanted to see when she opened her eyes. So she's of course the example of the highest Krishna consciousness. So Bhagavatam says that what is the value if your eyes are like the eyes on a peacock feather if you have not seen the deity of Krishna or pictures of Krishna? Your ears are like the ear holes of a snake, and your tongue is like the tongue of a frog without speaking about Krishna. So in the next verse, she expands her lamentation from her body, the bodies of the Pandavas, to the whole kingdom. And what is the value of our kingdom without you? Verse 39. Nayam shavishate tacha matetanim katadhara tvapatarankitabhati sadakshana vilakshite ogadadhar Krishna. Our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. So because Krishna was there, there was opulence. That's what she's saying. So Prabhupada said, if we keep Krishna in the center, there will be opulence, as you were telling me just now. It's a fact. If Krishna is, you're ready to spend your money for Krishna, that I also realized. I was trying to keep some money, but then I realized you can't keep it, and it's no use to even try. So therefore I thought, okay, whatever I have, I'll just spend for printing books. And then as soon as I made that decision, then so much money was coming just to print books. So I thought, yes, we have to spend for Krishna, whatever we get, and not to worry that there will be not enough. So if we keep Krishna in the center, then everything will be opulent. And not only when Krishna was present, it's true, but even now, Prabhupada says that the truth is always the same. And if we can bring Krishna in the center, then we will be beautiful. Our life will be beautiful. Everything will be beautiful. And Krishna can become the center. He's always present, and we just have to invite him. My Lord, please come, be in the center. Prabhupada said, zero has no value, but if you bring one and put it in front, then it becomes very valuable. So Prabhupada tells us a secret, how to keep Krishna always in the center. And that is by kirtan. Yes, if you are always chanting, then Krishna will always be there. So today Krishna will certainly be here for the next 24 hours from 4 o'clock when we are having our 24-hour kirtan. And as soon as Krishna is there, all opulences are there. And he says, Krishna is Madhava. So we know that Krishna is Madhava. Madhava is here in this temple. And what does Madhava mean? Husband of the goddess of fortune. It means so much opulence is there with Krishna. So Krishna was not leaving, actually, the Pandavas, Prabhupada said, just as he never left Vrindavan. But Kunti is worrying, oh, Krishna is leaving. The actual effect of his absence is that he becomes more intensely present in the mind of the devotee. So often we hear separation is better or more enjoyable than meeting. So why is that? Why is separation better than meeting? Why do we hear that? How can it be possible? In the material world, it certainly doesn't seem like it's better unless it's somebody you don't like, of course. But it's somebody you really like and you're attached to. And they say separation is better than meeting. So how can that be? Now we're thinking spiritually, of course. How can separation be better than meeting?
More intense meditation.
That's right, more intense meditation. Come in. Successful, is she here? Very good, very good. We were just talking about, we were feeling separation from you.
I've been feeling separation all the time.
So, we thought of you when you appeared. And that is the effect of separation.
That is the Harinama isn't complete without her.
Yeah, and your loudspeaker. Yeah, we missed that yesterday. So we're talking, the question that we're discussing here is, why is separation more enjoyable than meeting? That is the question. And Rajeshwari said that it's because it's more intense, you feel more intensely. Are there any other reasons why separation is better than meeting? Because now Krishna is leaving Kunti. And Prabhupada says actually he's not leaving. He's more intensely felt in separation. Is there any other thing we can say about that? Why would separation be more enjoyable than meeting Krishna?
It churns up the emotions more. I mean, that's part of the intensity.
Right, it churns the emotions, okay, yes. It's part of the intensity. Another reason is because when you're with Krishna, there's only one Krishna, but in separation you see him everywhere. Oh, he was there, he did this, he was there. Oh, well, even that reminds me of Krishna. You know, everything reminds you of him. And so when you're with him, there's only one. But when you're without him, then he might be there, he might be here, he might be in your heart, he might be everywhere. So it's a lot more Krishnas to think about in separation. And then you do feel him much more everywhere. You feel him everywhere rather than just localized in one place. So that is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, that when you are gone, everything, the whole world seems void. Prabhupada said, yes, everything is void, but Krishna consciousness is there. The whole world may be void, but you have your Krishna consciousness. So that is filling up everything. So Prabhupada said, when we see everything is nothing, but we only have Krishna consciousness, then we will have attained the highest perfection. That nothing has meaning without Krishna. And that is what Kunti is saying. If you leave us, our body, our fame, it's like the life is leaving the body. When the life leaves the body has no meaning. So Krishna is our life. If he leaves our body, if he leaves our presence, it's like we leave the body. So then we have no meaning to our life. So that's what she's telling Krishna. If you leave us, look what will happen to us. We'll just be like dead bodies. Our kingdom will be like a dead kingdom. Because now it's beautiful, since you're looking on it, you're walking on it, and then it becomes beautiful. Prabhupada said in one purport, 3.124, there are still many devotees of the Lord lingering in ecstasy in search of Krishna and his childhood associates. And it's not that they meet Krishna, they see him face to face, but a devotee's eagerly searching after Krishna is as good as his seeing him personally. So imagine that, the search, just the search, is as good as seeing Krishna. How this is so cannot be explained, but it is factually realized by those who are pure devotees of the Lord. And he says that the very idea of searching for him in Vrindavan in pure God consciousness gives more pleasure to the devotee than seeing him face to face. But then he says, such devotees of the Lord see him face to face at every moment. And so it's quite interesting that the search is not different from seeing him. Just if you're having that search, so that's the purpose, part of the purpose of this seminar, to help you search for Krishna in your life. How to see Krishna in different ways. So our homework question for today was to meditate on pleasing Krishna. In whatever act or thought or whatever you're doing today, you're going to try and make Krishna happy. You're going to try and think, okay, this is for you. This is for you. So that is our task. In verse 40, she expands on the kingdom idea. All these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects because the herbs and grains are in abundance, the trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, the hills are full of minerals, and the oceans full of wealth. And this is all due to your glancing over them. So I'll say the Sanskrit. 40. Ime janaparasvita. Got an extra one. Supadva shahibirha. Vanagira jiranvanta. Kirante dhamavikshitai. So this is all due to your glance. So what is in a glance? What is in the glance of Krishna? Who can tell me? So many things. Yes?
The creation.
Creation, yes. Creation is there. What else?
Compassion.
Compassion, very good.
What else?
Love. Love, compassion, creation. Yes. And maintenance is also there. Did you know that? He didn't just glance and look away from Maya. He's still glancing. Because if he's, in 11th canto, it says 11:24:20, as long as he continues to glance upon nature, the material world continues to exist. So if he were to stop glancing, finished, everything would be finished. So he has to be maintaining it by his glance, not only creating it, but he's also maintaining it. And there's also destruction in his glance. Can anybody tell me when? At which time? Or which lila, or whatever, was their destruction in the glance of Krishna? And that is at the Battle of Kurukshetra. When Arjuna asked Krishna to put his chariot between the two armies, Krishna glanced at the opposite side, shortened the lifespans of the opposite party, Bhishma said, by his merciful glance. So, destruction is also there. He shortened the other side's lives by his glance. So everything in his glance, he can do everything with his eyes. He doesn't need to use any other part of his body, but his eyes are sufficient to create. But the point is that due to Krishna's glance, everything is wonderful in this world. Prabhupada said she never mentions industry and slaughterhouses are flourishing very nicely due to her glance. No, Prabhupada said these are nonsense men have created, developed to create problems. And this is problems in the world. So we have to depend on Krishna and then everything will be okay. And formerly in India, the wealth was gold, silver, jewels, pearls, silk, and all the other countries wanted to get to India to try to get these things. In fact, Columbus was looking for India when he went to, when he discovered America and he thought it was India and he called them Indians, the people he saw there. He was looking for the wealth of India. He was looking for a shortcut. A short way to get to India. That's where everybody wanted to go. China, Europe, everybody. Because all the wealth was in India. Because it was the capital of the world. The emperors were in India. And all the wealth was there. So now, of course, it's different. Now India thinks technology is the wealth of the world. And they want to, they're going after the technology of the West. But I remember when I was in India in the 70s and there was a shortage of rice because India was sending the rice to Russia, trading it for weapons and things like that. So rice was rationed. We couldn't get rice. And the devotees in Bombay were arrested for doing food for life because they had over their quota of rice. Wow. Put in jail. Those are the 70s. And when I went to visit Bombay, they were then at one point they were eating this Kadashi rice. They didn't have rice. Every day it was Kadashi rice, samachal. That was, and there was a, in the newspaper there was a cartoon. The prime minister was there and they were saying, oh, we're hungry. Please give us food, the Indian people. And she said, don't worry. After 1 week, you will have TV. Mm. And that's what happened. And the TV led to the degradation of India. I was there in Goa, in the village, when TV arrived in that village. And before that, it was very nice social life. Every night, everybody would get together and talk and do things. And then TV came. So then we went to visit our friends one night, and everybody was in front of the TV, staring. Couldn't even talk to them, you know, anymore. They were just glued to the TV. And they said, and they were telling us, oh, we're learning so many things. We learned that eggs are good for you. We should eat eggs now. Mm-hmm. This was TV. So much degradation just because of that. And food, no. Food was difficult. And so Prabhupada said, in the purport, the gigantic industrial enterprises are products of a godless civilization. So they don't depend on the natural things, and they think natural things, this is primitive. You know, we were trying to get one natural medicine, and I heard, they told us, no, this medicine is now on the banned list, because it has not been proven, according to the scientists, that it works. So if you want to put it back for sale, you have to do clinical trials, pay £35,000 to probably, who knows, the scientist or somebody, and they will approve your drug as suitable for the people. So natural things, that's primitive, that's unscientific, it's not according to our science, so therefore it must not work. Or if it does work, then it's dangerous. But actually it's the opposite. The natural things work and they're not dangerous. But the other drugs, you read the whole list of side effects, and the cure is often worse than the disease. Not many times. The cure, oftentimes. I'm not saying every time, but sometimes. But the point is not that if it works or doesn't work. The point is that people think that it has to be very sophisticated and like this in order that it be acceptable in our modern day society. Whereas the very natural things are actually were the best. And natural cures and natural things are very good. And all the, like I was talking to people, devotees were telling me, my grandmother, she knew so many cures. And in every country, the mothers knew how to cure their children. They were taught that by their mothers. They would pass it down, and they knew how to actually give cures and things. They didn't have to go to the doctor. And 5,000 years ago, they had the brahmanas. The brahmanas would go door to door. They would give free medical advice. They were Ayurvedic doctors, and they would just go door to door, and free astrology and free medical advice by the brahmins. And then they would be given some dakshina. You know, they wouldn't ask for anything, but then the people would be grateful and they would give them money or whatever, rice, different things. And so everything was there. It was a nice society. So Kunti is saying that, you know, all this opulence is due to you. And we can see such a difference between the ancient civilization and now. The kings previously, like Yudhisthira and Pandavas, as emperors, they would eat on gold plates once and then throw them away, just like we do with paper and plastic. For them, it was gold, and then they would just throw it. So people would get everything they needed because the kings were not greedy. And they would wear their fancy clothes, and then every time some dancers would come, then they would give away their clothes to the dancers. Or they would go and have a bath, a ceremonial bath. After the bath, they would put on new clothes, and the old clothes they would just give away. Very expensive, nice clothes would go to the Shudras. So they would wear the king's clothes and the queen's clothes. The Shudras, the dancers, the singers, the reciters, they would get the king's and queen's clothes. So everyone was satisfied because they got, you know, the best. Everyone got the best. Everyone was living in a very nice level of society. And all the gold they would give to the Brahmins. And the Brahmins couldn't carry it, so they would just leave it. And so they would just take what they could carry. It's described. And that's how Arjuna found so much gold in the Himalayas for the Rajasiya sacrifice. Because Maruta did a sacrifice. He gave all the gold to the Brahmins. And they just left it because, you know, how much can you carry? And there were no cars. They didn't have cars and things and like that. And they weren't greedy also. They just took what they could carry on their back or in their little whatever things, bags. So this is opulence. This is opulence, and the opulence comes by the pleasure of Krishna. Also, in Krishna's glance, as we said, there is compassion, there is creation. In the 10th canto, 13th chapter, verse 50, after Lord Brahma stole the cows and cowherd boys, he had a vision of how all the cows and cowherd boys are transformed into Vishnu forms. And each one of those forms was smiling and glancing at him. And in the glance, it was like the motive passion, like creation. But what was that creation? When the Lord glanced at him, then it created desires for devotional service in the heart. So if we go in front of the deities and get the glance of Krishna, mm-hmm. then we may increase our desires for devotional service. That's from the eyes. Now from the mouth, there is a smile. The smile is compared to the mode of goodness. So the smile, if you see Krishna's smile, that will maintain your desires, that will protect your desires in devotional service. So from the glance comes creation, like passion, and from the smile of Krishna comes maintenance, like goodness. So your desires will be protected by his smile. Krishna smiles at you, and then everything is perfect. So now we'll hear the last, not last, but the next two verses, we're going to hear about detachment and attachment to Krishna. Verse 41. Ata visvesha visvatman visvamarte sukeshime sneha pashamimam chinti deham pandasavishisu. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Rishnis. So Kunti Devi had two families. One family was with her in Hastinapur, and the other family was in Dwarka, where Krishna was going. So if she asked Krishna to stay here in this family with her, then her father's family would be bereft of Krishna's association. So this is disturbing her mind. That, okay, you know, if I keep him here, then that means my parents' family, they won't see Krishna. So she said, better I just cut off all this affection and just love you only. So Vishnu Chakravarti comments, well, I die uselessly thinking only of their welfare. Now Prabhupada in the purport, in paragraph 2, he says, a pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing so, no one can be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. Wow, okay. But preaching means not just to cut off, it means to broaden. So our family is actually very big. Very big. Previously in the Vedic times, the grihastha, the married people, they used to have to provide for everyone in the house, including any animals that would happen to come. And they would have to call out before they would take their lunch 3 times, is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? So in our ISKCON, sometimes the grihasthas would do this. And sometimes sannyasis and brahmacharis would hide in the bushes and say, yes, we're hungry. Yeah, they would preach in the class first and then they would go. But anyway, yeah, that was the duty of the grihastha, the married person, to provide for everyone. And Prabhupada says that you must have some attachment in this world, or you must have some attachment. You try to become completely detached, it's not possible. The Mayavadis, the impersonalists, they try to be detached and have nothing, but they cannot do it. They cannot maintain their detachment. They must be attached. In Vrindavan, there's a lot of these impersonalist sannyasis. There's one ashram called Soham Ashram. Soham. I am that. And that's their slogan. Soham Ashram. And there's one ashram, there are many, there's one ashram nearby that has a sannyasi, Mayavadi sannyasi is in charge of the ashram. So one time one of our congregational devotees from England went to stay there and somehow she got into an affair with the sannyasi in charge of the ashram. And she was, you know, not a devotee really, but just somebody visiting the temple. And so she knew a little philosophy. So one day she said to the sannyasi, you know, this is not good. We should get married. And the sannyasi said to her, I can't get married. I'm a sannyasi. So to have illicit sex is okay. That's normal for them, but not to get married. If you get married, that's against sannyasi. So this is going on in Vrindavan. This is a problem. The point is that you cannot be artificially detached, you must have something. So what we must be attached to is Krishna. And so Kunti is realizing it is that I want this pure devotion. I just want to be attached to you. And so therefore she's praying for detachment also. So I would just like to ask you a question that so detachment is of two types. There is healthy detachment and unhealthy detachment. So who can tell me what, first of all, what is unhealthy detachment? What could be a symptom of unhealthy?
Meaning you're detached from things that you're actually supposed to have duties, real duties.
Yes, okay. You renounce things, you renounce your duties, in other words. You renounce your duties in Krishna consciousness. Oh, I'm detached. I don't care. I mean, I don't need to think about these things. I am detached. Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. Yeah?
It's the same thing, really, that you neglect what you're supposed to do in the name of high philosophy. That you're not really on that platform.
Right, right. You neglect what you're supposed to do in the name of high philosophy. Another thing that we used to do in the early days, and I don't know about now, is that we used to neglect our health because I am not this body. I'm not this body, so therefore the body can go to hell. Actually, I'll just do my service. The standard was actually 4 hours of sleep and 20 hours of service. That was the standard when I joined. And I kept that standard for 7 years, actually, pretty much. But it's, you know, then you get sick and so many things, and it's not really what you're supposed to do. And what would happen is devotees would get completely broken and finished. And then they couldn't do anything for a few months. They would have to recuperate their sickness for a few months and then go back to devotional service. Yeah?
Bhagavan Bhakash told a story that he was doing that thing of not being the body, and he was sleeping in the van. It was freezing cold.
Yeah.
And then one morning he woke up and his whole body was stiff. He couldn't move.
Wow.
He was supposed to be doing book distribution.
Wow.
But he was...
Froze.
He just froze, yeah. He was stiff. He couldn't do his service because he was... But, you know, he needed the body.
Yeah, Janmashtami in Mayapur, he did that. When he was a new devotee, he went out in a hot sun with a bald head, and he got all these huge blisters on his head. He said he was in the New York temple, and he walked in, and one little kid saw him and started screaming, "Ah, monster!" And went running to his mother. Yeah.
Yes,
very aware.
Uh-huh. It's like bodily contact, but at the same time,
yes.
It appears from his example that it's necessary to try and help that.
That's right. Prabhupada was very aware of anybody's suffering. Yeah. He was aware that, when he was on his morning walk, you know, then he would just notice if somebody was cold, you know, and Prabhupada would even give him his charter. You know, please take this charter. He would notice. And sometimes devotees would feel that Prabhupada, he would notice devotees are cold, and he would just say, "I'm feeling cold, let's go back." So that was, yeah?
It's not a material thing to take care of devotees.
No, it's Krishna's body. It's Krishna's body. I mean, if you're a materialist, it's a material thing. But if you're a devotee, your body is no longer material. It's not your body anymore. It's Krishna's body. So it's Krishna's property. So therefore, we have to take nice care of it. And it's okay to even pray for your health to Lord Nrisimhadev, according to Shivaram Swami in his book, Chintamani, whatever huge name. Chintamani, I don't know what his name was. Something, Chintamani of Devotional Service. He said, yes, it's all right to pray for your health to Krishna. Nrisimhadev is the person to pray to. In Mayapur, he gives everyone everything, whatever they want.
But isn't it even a higher thing? Because it's pleasing to Krishna if you serve his, more pleasing to Krishna if you serve his devotees than you serve him.
That's true.
So if you take care of devotees,
right.
Are you actually pleasing Krishna a lot? Even
yeah.
If they seem like a material thing, like medicine or food or
Yes.
And what devotees might need for the diet.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. If you please the devotees, then that's very, then Krishna is very happy. That's very pleasing to him. That's right. Okay, so let's go to healthy detachment. Means what?
Get up in the morning.
I get up in the morning for Mangalarti. Yeah, that's Prabhupada said that. That's not only healthy detachment, that's a sign that you're Krishna conscious, he said, if you get up early in the morning. And if you don't, then you're in Maya. I mean, unless you're very sick or something. Unless you're sick, but... he was saying that anyone who is serious, if you're serious, you'll get up early in the morning. You're a serious devotee. Yes, and the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 14 again, Satatam Kitayantamam, says that the devotees, the serious devotees, they perform all the rules and regulations and the austerities, because just to get admission into the spiritual world in Krishna's association, you need to do these things. You need to get up early, you need to do austerities, you need to follow the rules and regulations. Then you will get admission. That's what you have to do for admission. So that's really nice. Okay, so now we'll go to attachment. What is unhealthy attachment? Unhealthy attachment. You don't know. I know, actually. I can tell you. I'm a mother.
Tobacco.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I'm talking about in family life. Or I can tell you it's... like when my son, he got a certain age, then he decided to leave home, and he decided to leave Krishna also. So then I was feeling it actually because of, you know, my attachment. Then I was feeling very unhappy and upset, and even I got sick. So this is the limit. You can't get sick. Unhealthy. A symptom of unhealthy attachment is when you yourself get sick out of worry. So you have to leave it up to Krishna and understand, no, everyone has their choice. They have to find Krishna also themselves. And now he is. Now it's much better. Things have improved and he is finding Krishna. And but before that I had to just let go and let Krishna take care and give him that inspiration. But yeah.
Let him go and just don't... not thinking that you should control or be like, you know, hands on and everything. It's kind of hard.
Yeah, it's very hard. But at a certain age, you have to do it. Yeah.
When I went through that same thing, my understanding is that you have to give your children, given the instruction, you have to give them the opportunity to take the devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that you have to force them and make them to be a devotee.
Exactly.
You have to give them full opportunity.
Yeah.
And then it's their free will, because everybody has free will. For
yeah, that's right. You can't force.
You can't say, but you must be a devotee. Because you want to say like that.
Yeah, you can't force. And that's what my son didn't like when he went to Gurukul. He said, you're forced. They force you to do stuff. Yeah?
That example that a child is given, you know, a very young child is given, it always gets them in the end.
Yeah.
It will never ever leave.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. The child, they get...
At some point it will get them.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
I know, again, my son is an example. He tried to leave, but then he was so attached to Indian food, which was prasadam, of course. And so that got him back. That was the first thing that got him back, was the prasadam. The American food just didn't live up. It just wasn't the same. But now it's, you know, Vrindavan, everything. It's so... Separation is very good sometimes to make you appreciate what you had. Yeah, it really helps you appreciate what you have. And then now he's a father and he's got a daughter. Then so much Krishna consciousness has to be there now for the child, actually. Deities, he wants his Radha Krishna deities and so many things. So even following Kadashi and... Yeah. Yeah, so it's really nice. It's very good to see that... we had to find Krishna, so they must also find Krishna. And I know I was talking to one mother in Mayapur of an 8-year-old girl, And she said, oh, yeah, when my girl grows up at the age of 18, she will do this and she will do that. And I said, don't be so sure. She will do this and she will do that when she's 18. She will do what she wants when she's 18, pretty much. Anyway, so, yes, unhealthy attachment. Healthy attachment is, as you say, to give the opportunity. Anything else unhealthy attachment is, yeah, we don't force, but we give the opportunity to our children. And healthy attachment, of course, is also for Krishna. And that's the point that Kunti is making here. And the next verse will be about that. Toi me nanyavishaya matir matupates krit 42. Vatimu vahadarha gangiva kamadam pati. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganga forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn into you without being diverted to anyone else. So Srila Prabhupada said, when we increase our attachment for Krishna, our renunciation will be perfect. Because we'll lose our taste. If we love Krishna, we'll automatically we'll lose our taste for this world. Just like Dhruva, he wanted a kingdom. When he saw Narayan, he forgot everything. He said, I was after some broken pieces of glass. Now I have got you. I have a very valuable jewel. So Prabhupada says in the prayer part of that, to cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements like affection for someone else. I just remembered Giriraj has to eat, but it might be too late. Actually,
it's 12 after 12.
12 after 12, is that too late for him to go?
He could go on the altar while they're eating and maybe...
But the only one is where is...
Shamamai.
Oh, she's supposed to take your rush on the altar. Okay.
Yeah, she didn't sleep much.
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk to Nita and get him to your rush?
Yeah, maybe you could ask. Thank you. Because he just reminded me. Maybe that's why he ate so much yesterday. He had four offerings, three offerings.
I cooked him some rice otherwise.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll just put him on and he'll have the later offerings. Okay. Yeah, so that's good. I just thought of him, or he thought of me, and let me know if the time has passed. To cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements, like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others, because this is a symptom of life. So, Kunti is praying for change of heart, to become attached to Krishna. And how is this? Asakrit, that means continuously. Oh, I always want to think of you. Not that 1 minute yes, 2 minutes no. And also to think that he's coming? Or?
He's coming just before the offering. He'll take me right.
Oh, good. He didn't offer yet.
No.
Just see? We made it in time. Yeah, I guess I was attached to Giriraj, or else he... But as super soul, he reminded me I'm hungry. Take me out for lunch. Yeah, it was a potential. Good. So, a symptom of someone who has love for Krishna means that they don't want to waste a minute. One example is my god sister, Ladini, who used to do deity worship, from 2 in the morning till 10 at night, she was engaged, the standard. And she would get up at 2, chop wood to make a fire for the deities to keep them warm, go have cut a hole in the ice and take her bath outside in New Vrindavan. And then she would cook all the offerings, do all the artis, dress the deities, and that was her day. She was doing all the service for Jagannath. And and she read all of Prabhupada's books 3 times, including Chaitanya Charitamrita. So how did she do that? So when it was time for offering, she would sit and read. At the same time, she would make giwiks and read the books. And that's how she used her time in the offerings. And she would keep a book open in every room she would go into. And then it was open and she would just glance at it and she would read like a verse per part wherever, you know, for a minute and then go to the next room. Whatever service she had in different rooms. So it is possible. You may think you don't have time, but you do have time to read. You do have time to do these things. It's just a matter of desire. So Prabhupada also, he said, oh, he used to tell Shuddhakirti at bedtime, oh, I have to sleep now. What a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he didn't even sleep at night. There was one devotee who remembered Prabhupada in the, I think, near the end of his life in 77. And he would do the night watch. He would watch Prabhupada at night, guard him. And he said he would see Harisari go in, massage him like 10, 10:30, and then turn off the light, and Harisari would leave. And then as soon as he would leave, Prabhupada would turn on the light and start translating. And so he said he saw this go on for months. And he would just sleep 1-2 hours in the afternoon, and that was it. And so Prabhupada, he could do that, actually. You can't imitate, of course. So here it says, at the end of the prayer for paragraph 3, relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. When Kunti Devi wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. This relation of soul to soul can be established by the via medium of relation with the super soul. So we have a soul-to-soul relationship, but super-soul is also there. There's a book in the in India about married life, and it's called The Third Partner. You have your husband, your wife, and Krishna. Three, the threesome. And Krishna is also there. So yes, we have our relationship, but via the super-soul. And Prabhupada said, so therefore, if you're intelligent, you should ask the question, well, where can I have eternal family life? I like family, so why? Where can I have eternal family? Now that's Krishna's family. And not only that, we have our family up there. We have our mother and our father and our brothers and sisters and our husband or wife just waiting for us to go there. It's already there. And we have a place in the spiritual world. Our family, we have a family. Eternal family. So Krishna is so kind. Okay, you like family life? I've got my family. I've got my father, my mother, my friends, and you can become one. You can also join and be my friend. Why are you rotting here? So that's Sarvadharma again, Parijaja. Why are you rotting in this material world? Come and be my friend. So one of my god sisters, her name is Sumati, when she first came to the temple, someone opened the door, a young lady, and she opened the door, and the first thing she said to Sumati was, welcome home. Let me show you your father. So she showed a picture of Srila Prabhupada. Let me show you your grandfather. She showed a picture of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And here are your brothers and sisters. She showed all the devotees. And you can stay here the rest of your life. Just bring your toothbrush and you can stay the rest of your life. So then Sumati went home and thought about it. And the next morning she got her toothbrush and she went to the temple president and said, I brought my toothbrush. Can I stay the rest of my life? And he said, well, can you follow these four regulative principles? And she said, I think so. Of course, she'd been a chain smoker up until that moment. But then, as soon as she moved in, that was it. And she followed. And she's still here today, after 41 years. 41 years. She's still a devotee. So yes, when you join Krishna's family, and the whole world becomes your family. And when I was in Mayapur, 2006, I think, it was the year after Bhaktivedanta Swami left. I was there for Jayapataka Maharaj's Vyasa Puja, and there was one written by Bhaktivedanta Swami just before he left, in glorification of Jayapataka Maharaj. And at the end, he said, I won't say goodbye, but I will say, see you soon. Mm-hmm. So there's an ISKCON in the spiritual world, as Prabhupada used to say many times. So therefore, we need to learn how to get along with each other because we might be seeing each other eternally for all we know. But fortunately, there won't be the problems in the spiritual world that we have here. But still, we need to appreciate each other because these may be the people you'll be living with the rest of your eternal life.
That's scary.
I know. Oh, welcome. Pujariji, can you move away from the door a little bit? So here is Giriraj. Can you just take him for lunch? Take him out for lunch. Our second Pujari is not here at the moment. So We need you, and we did it just in time. Can you manage?
Yep.
Thank you. Raj Maharaj Ki Jai. All right, so the last verse for today, verse 43. This is a summary of all the verses of her prayers. Shri Krishna Krishna Saka Vishni Vishapavanin Truk Rajanya Vangshadahana Navavarga Virya Govinda Gauri Jasarati Haravatara Yogesara Kila Guru Bhagavan Namaste. O Krishna, O friend of Arjuna, O chief amongst the descendants of Rishi, you are the destroyer of those political parties which are disturbing elements on this earth. Your prowess never deteriorates. You are the proprietor of the transcendental abode, and you descend to relieve the distresses of the cows, brahmanas, and devotees. You possess all mystic powers, and you are the preceptor of the entire universe. You are the Almighty God, and I offer you my respectful obeisances. So Krishna Sakha means Krishna is friend of Arjuna eternally. It also means Draupadi. She's actually in the rasa of friendship with Krishna. Her another name is Krishna. She also has that rasa of friendship. So Prabhupada said, Krishna is prepared to make you friend. Therefore he comes. And again, that verse, Sarvadharma Pritya, please come, become my friend. Prabhupada says, make Krishna your friend, and then you'll never lose your friend. Make him your son, and you'll never lament, oh, my son has gone mad. He said that, Prabhupada said that. So this is the first point of this verse, friendship with Krishna. Second, Rishabha, he's the chief, the best. Avanidruk, he comes to destroy the political parties which are disturbing elements on the earth. So his name is also Anapavargavirya, and that means he gives us the path of liberation. In the Indian alphabet, there is something called Pavarga. Pavarga means a line of five different letters. Each line has, it starts with one letter, like ka or pa or something. So the line that starts with p or pa is pa, pa, ba, ba, and ma. And each of these have a certain meaning. And the whole list together is the path of struggle for existence. And so there's five different levels of struggle. First, you have to work hard, parishram. And second, pha. You work so hard that foam is coming from your mouth, pha. And that was my son's last job, was like that. He had to, the job was hard enough. It was from 12 to 8, 12 at night till 8 in the morning. And then he had to push like 2 tons of something, 5 feet. Mostly he had a motor, but then for 5 feet he had to push it himself. 2 tons of paper or something. And he, and within the 8 hours, he did it 50 times. And they weren't even satisfied with that. They said, no, you have to also work weekends, and you also have to work 12 hours a day. And he said, I just can't. And his feet were all, you know, bleeding and blistered, because you have to wear these big factory shoes, and you have to walk, you know, 15 kilometers or whatever, pushing tons. And so they fired him because he didn't want to work 12 hours a day, slave labor, you know. So this is America. Now the jobs are scarce, so they can just give you, make you work as much as they want you to. And in Canada, I had a devotee friend. She was on the higher level. She was a computer consultant. And her company, they don't give you overtime. They just pay by the month. So she was like, you know, graduate, MA in business, whatever. She was like, when I was there, she was coming back at home 10 at night, 12 at night, 2 in the morning, and she'd have to be back at work the next day at 7, 8 in the morning. And no extra pay. Because they would give them a project, you have 2 weeks to finish it. And they don't care how much time it takes you. And she said, because now the jobs are scarce, so therefore they know they can just work you really hard, and you won't give up your job. She told me. So this is going on. This is the news of this material world, that people are really suffering, especially now with this recession and all that. But devotees, they're not suffering. They're very happy. They're not. But this is the path of struggle. Pa, pa, then ba. Ba means byartata. Means you work hard, so hard, the foam comes out, and then end of your life, it's all, you're in frustration because now you can't enjoy. And where do you end up? In the old folks' home. in the old folks home. You end up there. And I saw my mother-in-law at the old folks home, and they drug you so that you don't give them trouble. They drug you up so heavy. And then she was like, yeah, she was so drugged that she was seeing things, you know, flying. She's trying to catch things. What's that? Oh, it was some butterflies, she said. She's trying to catch them like this. And then they're in diapers. They're all preparing for their next life. They're all in diapers. And then they have recreation time, so they sit them in a circle in the wheelchairs and they're hitting balloons to each other. So this is what I saw when I visited my mother-in-law in the old folks' home in America. Very expensive place, of course. You have to pay a lot to get in there. She was, you know, high class, so she went to a high class old folks' home. And force feeding. They force you to eat what you don't want to eat. It was interesting, though, when she saw us, because she would always have vegetarian when we were at her house, so then when we were there, she was insisting, no, vegetarian food while we were there. She was trying, but they wouldn't listen, of course. Now, there's this one lady, though, in Germany. She was amazing. There's this one lady I just met. Her name is Rita, 84 years old, who lives in an old age home, and she would come and visit the temple. And she told the people there, I am a member of Hare Krishna, so therefore I won't eat meat, fish, and eggs. And an Akadashi, no grains. And she was preaching to all the other old people. And she's half blind. And she would take a bus from her place, her old age home, to the temple every so often. And one time the devotees told me, and usually the bus driver, you know, leaves her right at the gate of the temple. Otherwise, the real stop is about a kilometer away. So one time she got a different driver and he left her 1 kilometer away. She's half blind. She can't see and she can't walk, right? But she walked to the temple from there. And so the devotees asked, well, how did you get here? And it's a highway, you know, it's in the forest, Goloka Dham, and they have these huge lumber trucks coming with, you know, really fast down a very narrow road, you know, like almost 1.5 lane like it was, a very small road. And she's walking on this road, this half-blind old lady. So devotees asked her, well, how did you make it here? She said, oh, I saw Krishna. He was in front of me. I just followed him the whole way. Mm-hmm. So, well, if you have a will, then Krishna helps. So, yeah, amazing. We don't see Krishna, but here's somebody who's Rita, who saw Krishna, who helped her come to the temple. Just like, you know, well, no problem. Anyway, if you have that strong of a desire, Krishna will help. So this is, so the path of struggle, it ends in frustration in your old age. My sister-in-law's in the old age home too, and she was very smart. She was like one of the top Scrabble players in the whole world. And a musician, and she was teaching music. She played many instruments, but then she lost her brain function, and now she's in the old age home. So imagine how frustrated you are to be in that position after having such a life. So then, yeah, as soon as she retired, she waited longer, she worked longer so she could have more money in retirement. And now all the money is going to pay for the old age home in her retirement. Now you can enjoy. Now you got your money, and now you don't have to work. She worked until she was like 67, I think. And that's it. Oh, and who told me that story? Oh, there was somebody, I can't remember now. His father was a very, very rich man. And he had a company. And they were having a celebration. Oh, he was retiring from his job also at the age of 67. And they were praising him. Oh, you did this, you did that. You are so intelligent. He said, yes. But actually, I have 4 sons, and one of them, I'm retiring at the age of 67, but my youngest son, he's the most intelligent because he retired at the age of 17 and joined the Hare Krishnas. So, that was Bhardi Narayan's father, actually. He said, yeah, my son was most intelligent. He retired at 17. So yes, we retired early. We retired early. Anyone asked me, you know, even when I was younger, they said, well, what is your occupation? I said, I'm retired. And I was on the airplane with some older ladies, and they said, well, how do you manage to get leave from your job? I said, I'm retired. Because they, you know, they can't get away from work to go traveling. So how do you get out 2 months every year? I get out, actually, my whole life it's out, you know. But they didn't know that. But so, yes, I'm retired. So anyway, okay, pa, pa, bia, ba, and pa. And then after frustration, fear, because you don't know what's going to happen to you. And after fear comes ma, or death. Pa, pa, ba, ba, and ma. That's the path of struggle in this material. You work hard your whole life, and then you die. So devotees, they're on the path of upavarga. So that's what this verse says. You will give upavarga, and that means no struggle, no hard work, no frustration, no fear, and no death. The devotee doesn't die. He lives eternally. He goes back to Godhead. So Krishna has come to give that, and that is part of the summary of her prayers. And then she says, Govindaya go dvija artihara sarartihara dvija. So Govinda, he is coming to protect the brahmanas, the cows, and the devotees. And Govinda, again, we said, if you connect with Govinda, you will have unlimited happiness. And then Yogeshwara, he is the master of all mystic powers. Prabhupada said that if you are the son of a very rich man, you don't worry about money. He said, no, my father will pay. So we are children of Krishna. If we want mystic powers, we don't need it. Actually, Krishna is Yogeshwara, he will give all mystic powers. And that is the example of Ambarish Maharaj. He had no mystic powers, but he defeated the greatest yogi, Dvijasa Muni. So Prabhupada said, people tell, I have done miracles. But he says, I didn't know any mystic power. It's Krishna's desire. Krishna is pleased with me. For me, this person has come to serve. Now, see how wonderful he is. So he's done miracles. Yogeshwara, Anapavirgavirya. And so the last point Prabhupada made actually in his lecture, Krishna is so kind, even though we can't worship him properly, anywhere we can chant Hare Krishna, and we get all the power of Yogeshwara and Apavargavirya. All the power is there in the holy name. So that's Prabhupada said that in his lecture. So we'll also end with that thought. And I'll just remind you of your homework. If you are showing up tomorrow at the Sunday Feast lecture, then I'll ask you about your homework. Your last homework question for the day is to today, and whatever you do, try to do it to please Krishna, to make Krishna happy. Your chanting, your eating, your whatever you do, offer it to Krishna. This is for you, Krishna. Okay? So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments?
You said about in the spiritual world we don't have problems with other devotees, we don't have difficulties.
Right.
But is there a way to see difficulties that we have now with other devotees? Is there a way to see that as a progressive thing, as a positive thing?
Of course. So the question is there a way to see difficulties we have with other devotees as a positive thing, a progressive thing? Yes, we can do that. Actually, it's one of the demons that Krishna killed in Krishna Lila. It's called Agnim Pitva. That's the forest fire. So if we have problems, actually it may be seen as a demon, actually, that if we have problems between devotees, arguments or quarrels or like that, it is a problem. But it's in the list of problems for devotees that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave. In Krishna Lila, there are 20 demons, and one of them is the fights between devotees. So how to become free from that? We read the Lila of Krishna, and we can pray to Krishna, please remove this obstacle in my path. And of course, anything negative can be seen as a progressive step. We can see, okay, what do I learn? First question, what do I learn from this experience? What is it in me that makes this happen with another person? What is it in myself? Usually what we don't like in somebody else is the worst thing in ourselves. Usually. Murijan Prabhu made a story about that, how he was eating in Prasadam with some devotees for a few weeks, and he was watching one devotee, and that devotee was sitting in a very strange way and eating. And Burijan was just looking and thinking, wow, that's terrible, that's terrible. But after 2 weeks, then Burijan started looking, putting in the same way and eating like that devotee. So, yes, whatever you find wrong with another person, either it's in you or it will be in you very soon if you meditate on it. So there are many things you can do. There's, of course, you see, the main thing is to see Krishna in the heart of that devotee. And you can pray to the super soul in the heart of that other person. I pray for the benefit of the other person. Pray for understanding, and they may understand you, and that will be very helpful. And there's all these, Mahatma Das gives a course on forgiveness, which is also a lot of people find this very helpful, to go through some steps in that. And that is the beauty of a Brahmin, Prabhupada says, is forgiveness. That is the beauty of a Brahmin. Beauty of a Kshatriya is his heroism. Beauty of a Vaishya is his cultural contribution to cultural affairs. Beauty of a Shudra is his faithfulness to his master. So everyone has a certain beauty, and that's the beauty of a Brahmin. So often we have problems between devotees out of anger or something like that. Okay, so it can be, yes, if we see it as a learning experience on our side, then it can be very beneficial to us. Any other questions? Comments? Okay, all glories to Shri Prabhupada and Krishna.